Radio presents Accessible Cinema, a program about media accessibility, sponsored by SubT Access, subtitling and audio description services for cinema, television, theatre performances and other live events. Accessible Cinema.
Welcome to Fred Accessible Cinema, Fred's program on media accessibility and inclusion to inform you about the status of accessibility in the media industry. In this new episode, we will know more about the changes that the COVID-19 pandemic has brought to the field of media accessibility. What are the main challenges, but also what are the opportunities? We all know that films that were supposed to come out in theatres are now streamed directly online. So, in this context, what is the role of online streaming platforms in making entertainment accessible to everyone? And are we going towards a digital media accessibility? And if so, how can we improve it? How is the cinema market changing, especially in terms of media accessibility services? Well, these are some of the questions we'll try to answer with our guest today. But we'll see together that not only the distribution, but also the production of accessibility services is changing. For example, subtitling, dubbing, audio description, and so on. For example, entertainment technology and localization companies worldwide, and we are going to talk about this with our guest today, are increasingly relying on online subtitling, online dubbing, and online audio description platforms, which have been designed to overcome, first of all, the current COVID-19 related geographic and physical separation challenges facing creative localization teams in the world, but also future business disruptions that may occur. So we are going to know more about these transformations today, as I said, not only in terms of distribution, but also production of accessibility services in this new episode of Accessible Cinema. And COVID has also highlighted the importance of activism and advocacy for equal access to information, to culture, but also to entertainment. And in this context, we'll see together today that digital media accessibility is not only a way to facilitate access for the passive consumption, let's say, of digital content, but also to strengthen the awareness and the promotion of the rights of persons with sensory disabilities, and even to make access to creation possible. So, in this context, how can we enable users with varying abilities and with different disabilities to fully participate as active agents? Well, these are some of the topics we will be covering together with our guest today. There is a lot to take in, so don't move. Stay with us to know more about media accessibility and inclusion in COVID times.
Fred Film Radio.
Accessible Cinema.
Welcome back to Fred Accessible Cinema. This new episode is dedicated to the new challenges, but also opportunities for all of us in terms of accessibility and inclusion during and after COVID-19. So, to know more about that, we're going to listen to an interview with Jorge Díaz-Cintas, Professor of Translation Studies and Founder Director of the Centre for Translation Studies at University College London. He is also the recipient of the Jan Iverson Award in 2014 and the Xenia Martinez Award in 2015 for invaluable services to the field of audiovisual translation. It's a real pleasure to have you with us, Jorge. Welcome to Fred.
Thank you very much for the invitation, Francesca. It's a great pleasure to be here today, talking to you about this situation in which we find ourselves and media accessibility.
Yes. First of all, Jorge, how are you? How is the situation in the UK in general?
I'm personally fine, though I've been at home confined and on lockdown since March, more or less. Mm-hmm. The situation in the UK, as you know, we entered into the COVID lockdown a bit later than the rest of Europe, and we're still in the mists of it. I can see in other countries like Italy or Spain, France, they are evolving a bit faster than we are. We're still having, I think, the largest number of dead people in Europe, and the government is still struggling on how to find a way out. It's a mixed situation now.
Yeah, and especially in London, I mean, a city home to more than 9 million people, always full of tourists.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it was rare, especially during the lockdown, to see the streets so empty.
Yes, it still is nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, all our museums, all our theatres, any public spaces, cultural public spaces are still closed in the country, and London, you know, the Soho in central London is the heart of all these cultural productions. So now if you walk around there, it's just like walking on a sort of lunar space with virtually nobody around. All the places closed, a few restaurants opened, but people are not venturing in. And the situation as well is that London, the center of London, is a business center or cultural center, and people in London cannot afford to live in central London, so we all live outside. So that means that very few people live in central London, and it's, you know, doubly empty because of that. You know, I guess now the suburban areas are much more lively.
Lively, yes, of course.
Than the center.
Yeah, I saw some pictures that a friend of mine sent to me via WhatsApp, and the streets around some of London's most popular landmarks were, well, not empty, but were not as busy as they normally are, of course. And it was weird, you know, to see Covent Garden's market almost empty. Or I remember a picture of Oxford Circus Station, which was almost deserted. So it was weird.
Yeah, no, it's weird. I compare it, you know, if you know London on a normal in a normal situation, then the city of London, which is to the east of the of London itself, which is the financial district, if you go there a weekend, is equally deserted. And I guess now that's the feeling in the rest of the city.
Yeah.
But I myself haven't seen it, so maybe one day I should venture to get that glimpse of history. and remember it later.
Jorge, you are the author of numerous articles, special issues and books on audiovisual translation and in general media accessibility. And you have, of course, also taken into account the main changes that have occurred in the audiovisual translation landscape and more generally media accessibility. And among these changes, we have seen the rise of online streaming platforms. They are everywhere, and we heavily relied on them, especially during the COVID-19 lockdown. Do you think this will have an impact, or has already had an impact, either positive or negative, on AVT and media accessibility in general? What do you think?
Yes, it's been one of those changes that everybody has been discussing in media circles. And it is true that it has taken by surprise many of these big players in the industry. I was just looking briefly before the interview at some of the data that has been floated in the newspapers. And for instance, Netflix was expecting to get around about 7 new million subscribers between March and June this year. And the reality is that they have to double up their numbers, and they've got nearly 16 more million subscribers to their services than they were expecting. So that means that now they've got around about over 180 million subscribers altogether, which is an amazing number. And a few years, well, a year ago, nobody would have expected this to happen. So that means that more people are watching the media. They are staying at home and trying to find alternatives to what they would have done during the so-called normal time.
Yeah, of course. We have also, you know, the closure of cinemas and other public spaces. So, yes.
Theaters, or musicals, whatever it is.
Of course.
Pubs that you cannot really go to.
Yes.
Restaurants. So people have to spend a lot more time at home. Now, that sort of clashes slightly with the fact that all these media outlets, which not only distribute audiovisual material, but they also produce, they have to stop their production channels.
Yeah.
So they couldn't produce faster or more programs. And what we found is that many of these outlets, what they've done is go back to their archives.
And back catalog content,
Exactly. Yes, and translating and making accessible material that was sort of forgotten, that wasn't one of the priorities, but that they needed to do somehow to create new material that people could watch, even if it's not that new and is pretty old. So that's been one of the things that we've seen in here in terms of production. We know that exhibition and consumption has really exploded and many more people have been watching things. You know, the bulk has come through quite a lot of catalog translation that needed to be done and a few new things that have been done, but not that many, as opposed to what it would have been a normal year.
I read that during the lockdown and because of coronavirus, Netflix has somehow improved the accessibility settings that people with vision or hearing impairments can use to access its contents. Do you think this is the case or not?
Well, I have done things for Netflix in the past, and I know that they've been from a very early age very welcoming of anything that has got to do with translation at the general level, in terms of translating across languages, but also for media accessibility, and they've been one of the main video on demand platforms, if not the main, to have embraced accessibility. So, you know, they've always had subtitling for the deaf and hard of hearing and audio description for the blind, perhaps not so much sign language, and that's one of the areas that they haven't promoted as much as probably broadcasters. But that's always been present in their offer, and a lot more than other competitors. So in that sense, yes, I guess that this sort of period has proved a situation where, you know, they could just take a look at their wider offer and probably speed up or work a little bit more on accessibility. But as I said, they've been working on this for a while, trying to deal with automation and see whether automation can help them boost their accessibility services and so on, and diversify their accessibility into other languages. Because now what it happens is that if you've got a film in English, it will be accessible in English, or if it's in Spanish, it will be accessible in Spanish, but it might not be accessible. A Spanish TV series might not be accessible to everyone in German, Italian or English. And I think that's one of the biggest conundrums. That's going to be one of the biggest areas for them to tackle, because that multiplies everything into several dozens of languages, and that becomes expensive but also complex from a logistic point of view.
Well, the rise of online streaming platforms has given audiovisual productions in languages other than English a chance somehow to reach new audiences, maybe.
That has proven to be one of the other defining factors that we are living through, which is, you know, it was nearly a given a decade ago that audiovisual media was mostly in English, and it was virtually mostly American productions, productions from the USA. But the British were also there, and some other regions where they speak English. And that was a given, that nobody was really thinking about combining other languages, and globalization as such was understood as British or American productions conquering the rest of the world, until just very recently, when we just found that, you know, platforms like Netflix, but HBO as well, decided to start producing programs in other languages than English. Mm-hmm. And to their surprise, I guess, they discovered that they've been very, very popular.
So very successful, things like, yes.
L'Amica Ideale, yeah. L'Amica Geniale, HBO, but also in Netflix, mm-hmm. La Casa de Papel or Money yeah. Heist, Dark, mm-hmm. and so on. Mm-hmm. So now they're moving more in that direction of having many other languages and making it truly global. Uh-huh. In the sense that the plurality of languages are present there. It's still not as much as English.
It's English, of
but
course,
clearly
yes.
improving. As compared to what it was like a few years back.
And you mentioned the use of automated captioning technologies. Do you think that these has somehow increased because of coronavirus and we are going towards this direction, towards automation more and more?
Well, yeah, but I think automation is here to stay in the audiovisual field. And it was an area that, again, a few years back, we thought we were pretty untouched and it was never going to go our way because of the creativity involved in the material that we work with. Now that creativity has been dispelled. And yes, there are programs that can be very creative, but there is also large amounts of audiovisual production that can be very repetitive, mm-hmm. And then can have areas that could be automatized. And that is what the industry is finding now a very interesting area to do research on. Mm-hmm. So not just only automatization as traditionally understood when translating the typical manuals for operating a TV set a washing machine. But now what we're finding a lot more is automatization on the likes of speech recognition mm-hmm. and how you can transcribe language into written text, which obviously will work very well for subtitles. Mm-hmm. But you can also do artificial intelligence image recognition and using that to help the translation into languages and seeing scanning what's going on in the images and see whether that could help make the translation better in languages that, for instance, we break into plurals that are formal, informal, feminines, masculine, which in English is not. By scanning the images, you can see that if something is nice and what appears on the screen is a car, then it's probably safe to make it masculine in Spanish or feminine in Italian, but as in English is neutral. And the machine wouldn't know. So all these things have been discussed and have been analyzed and been researched for a while. So I'm not really sure whether COVID has accelerated
this
type of research. But what is making it clear is that all society needs to be included in here, that the research needs to be done. If traditionally a lot was done into translation across languages, now a substantial amount is done into accessibility. And accessibility is becoming also one of the main financial outlets of these companies, whereas traditionally, Netflix started with translating into languages, and that's what they were finding financially viable and attractive, because they were, so to speak, conquering countries, and each country will bring in a new language, and that was their main interest. Now that they are based throughout the world, and the languages have become somehow stable in their agenda, that's why the interest is now into new audiences that weren't their primary interest, to make sure that they can build up, bigger numbers of subscribers,
a wider audience,
but also contribute to a society that is also fairer and is much more open and accessible, which is always in their ethos and in their company's mission.
For example, I read that IUNO Media Group, an entertainment technology and localization company, announced the launch of a remote recording platform, iDub, available globally. Mm-hmm. Is the market going towards these, these things? I mean, solutions taking into account geographic and physical separation? And what about accessibility services, if that is the case?
Yeah. Again, this is something that has been going on for a while. And we've been moving slowly but surely from desktop applications to our online environments. The industry since the mid-noughties has been moving in the direction of working remotely and what they call working on the cloud.
On the cloud.
In this situation that we find ourselves where mobility has been highly reduced for everyone, and we have to, we've been forced to stay at home longer periods of time, do our teaching through our computers and from home and so on, the appeal of remote access has been acknowledged by other players as well. So it's not just the companies, but it's also the universities and even theaters that are streaming their productions and so on. They now find other channels on how to reach the audiences that cannot move mm-hmm. from where they are, and how to reach the workers that cannot come to your offices and so on. So yes, subtitling in this area was the first one to be working remotely, and online cloud-based platforms for subtitling had been operating since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And then dubbing is the new one that is moving in that direction for revoicing. And of course, whether it is for dubbing or lip syncing, but also for audio description, is much easier now to have your voice talents working in different parts of the world and being able to record your voices on the platform, and then you based in whichever other country being able to just get that material and distribute throughout the rest of your network of countries that you're broadcasting to and so on. So in that sense, yes, we are moving in that direction, and I guess this was probably the boost that the industry needed to make to just ratify that sort of the direction of travel was correct. And we will have to wait and see what happens when they say that we go back to the new normal.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. But we don't know what was going to be like. We don't know whether some of the activities that we are doing now remotely will continue to be remotely because they've proven to be successful or cost-effective or logistically appropriate for certain companies, or whether we will go back to what it used to be before and pick it up again on desktop-based programs and so on. My inkling, my opinion is that we will be moving to the remote working environment, and these things are going to be much more common in the future, and working in the cloud will be the way of working.
The way of working for professionals in audiovisual translation. Yeah. And
we emulate what is happening. In my opinion, we emulate, working in post-production, in accessibility, but also as teachers working, training the professionals of the future, we also emulate what is going on in the industry. And the industry moved a while ago to the cloud. Everybody is now watching in the cloud. Nobody buys DVDs anymore, very few, and everybody just latches onto their computers, whether it is HBO, whether it is Disney Plus, Amazon Prime, or Netflix, or whatever. We're all in the cloud as consumers, and to me, it just follows that the industry.
And do you think that this will also change the way we teach media accessibility? And
In my opinion, if we really want to prepare the translators, the media accessibility brokers of the future, they will need to be conversant with this new technology. They will need to know how this works, what does it mean, so that they can be fully integrated into the workflows of these companies. Mm-hmm. And what we find now very challenging, you were mentioning, for instance, iUno and their platform for dubbing and revoicing. You've got other companies as well, VoiceQ in New Zealand, and here in the UK, for instance, Zoo dubs as well. Then you've got many others like Plint or Una or Subtitle yes. Next, which mm-hmm. are working in subtitling domain as well, remotely and on the cloud. The problem now from an academic perspective or the challenge is that many of these companies have got what they call proprietary cloud-based systems, which means that they won't allow us teachers to use as such, or they might allow us to show them briefly, but they are quite rightly a bit sort of aware that, you know, the competition is out there and they don't want to divulge their secrets on how they're doing things. So they keep it a little bit secret. And if you want to train the people of the future, you need to have access.
You can just show your students a small part of this platform, but you really need to, you know, of course.
Yeah, you show them and this is what it looks like, but no more than that.
Yeah, of course.
You know, we're not preparing them. Once they finish, they will have to go on to the company and then be trained there on these new systems. And that's what is a little bit of it's a shame that we cannot bridge those gaps a bit more and create an environment, an ecosystem that is functional in the industry, but it can also be used for educational purposes. And now we're struggling with that. There are, you know, there are a few possibilities there, and some companies like Una that would allow you to use it for teaching purposes. Still, I would like it a bit more developed and taking more into consideration the academic side on how you need to work for teaching, which is not exactly the same as you work for a company. But the basics are there, are shared with the industry.
Yes, of course.
And this is something that little by little we will have to develop and we will have to latch on to if we really want to prepare the people that are going to be really doing this in the future.
Ready for the future. Yes, also because otherwise it will be the company itself to train them.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
and we might be training things. Once they go to the companies, they need to be untrained or unlearned because they are either out of fashion or they are actually against the logic of what they are doing these days in the cloud and so on. So we have to be careful that we maintain a dialogue and we can keep
the balance.
These things going.
Yeah.
And I think right now most of the interest of these companies, but I think again because of financial
issues.
Considerations, they tend to be, the emphasis is usually on dubbing or subtitling across languages. Some of them would allow you now to do captions for deaf and hard of hearing people.
Or audio descriptions.
But they've been a bit slower in the uptake and dubbing. Most of the things that are doing now is voice talents for revoicing documentaries, commercial videos and so on. A little bit on audio description that is moving in that direction. But it, again, is the area that needs to accelerate a bit
to
more
in
this field.
And we are talking about digital media accessibility somehow. This is not only a way to facilitate access for the passive consumption of digital content, but also to strengthen the awareness and promotion of the rights of persons with sensory disabilities, and sometimes even to make access to creation possible. So to enable users with varying abilities and disabilities to fully participate as active agents. Do you think we are going towards this direction?
This is a challenging one. I think there is a lot of drive and momentum to integrate all kinds of people in society, whether it is racially, whether it is sexually, whether it is regarding disabilities and so on. So I think we're living in a moment that everybody seems to be a lot more aware of the need to create societies that are more inclusive and just. And that is not only making audiovisual productions available to people with disabilities, but as you rightly mentioned, it's also making these people much more active participants in the creation of those same productions. And there are the challenges as well, you know, trying to get involved these people into working environments where that were done differently, that didn't take them into consideration. So this is something that in some places, in some countries, is evolving a little bit, where they will bring in, for instance, blind people to get their support when creating audio description scripts, and then see whether it works or whether it doesn't work, and so on. So there is a little bit of a drive there. One of the challenges, in my opinion, is that this industry is so fast and everything needs to be done so quickly, generally speaking, that it is a big challenge to bring certain groups into the equation to be dynamic and being able to cope with the speed that it is. So creating an audio description script is challenging, needs to be done quickly. If you need to double check as well with somebody else in the workflow, then it delays the process slightly, and it can be done on occasions, and it is done. But when the projects are so quick, sometimes that is the first thing to go. It is, you know, we need things quickly, and we need to be doing them really straight away. So that is one of my of the big challenges that I think will be there to bring in all these people more into the equation. So what we're finding now is more marginal productions, you know, independent directors that are very aware, and you know, they really want to make a change in society, and then bringing in what is known as accessible filmmaking, which it is considering people with disabilities as the final targets of this production.
As but part also of the production,
to bringing them into the production as much as possible. And I think is a very commendable objective. And I know people are awakening to this, and things are happening on that front. Probably not as fast as some of us would like to see, but it is happening, and that can only be welcome.
So a lot of changes and transformations await us then in the field of media accessibility.
I'm pretty sure, it just has to be happening in that field, you know. One of the things with media accessibility, unlike, for instance, interlingual subtitling or dubbing or revoicing for documentaries or whatever, is that media accessibility is heavily legislated. And this legislation implies and leads to companies having to do to produce audiovisual accessible material, and there is no escape from that.
Yeah, of course.
So that legislation means that in some countries like the UK, the USA, Europe is awakening to that as well. Some broadcasters will have to do 100% of their productions are fully accessible, and there is no escape from that. They have to, whether they like it or not. Now, the changes that are coming along is that traditionally what we found was that all the legislation was targeting broadcasters in the traditional term, in the traditional understanding of the term, which is TV stations, and only that. But now that we're moving into online distribution, we've been very, very slow to legislate what's happening on the internet. And it's only been recently.
So we'll have a gap there somehow.
We still have a gap in many countries. We had a gap for a while in the UK, where you will find the BBC, for instance, will have most of the programs subtitled on television. But then the digital arm, which is called in Britain iPlayer, it wouldn't have the subtitles.
True.
It wouldn't have the audio description.
And very few audio descriptions as well.
And now they've changed. Now the legislation in this country, in the UK, which has been very progressive in this field, and probably one of the leading ones in Europe, is that online providers will have to abide by the legislation, and they also need to provide a percentage of material that is going to be accessible for people that are watching the internet, not just the television. So that is something that is changing, and the online services are becoming much more aware of the need to produce the subtitles. So quantitatively speaking, we are growing. But also, and I think one of the key changes there as well is that online, people have got much more power and control over what they are watching. And then you can manipulate your subtitles.
Yes, of course.
In a way
you can choose the size, you can choose the color.
Exactly.
And
you can choose the font, you can choose the contrast against the images if you want to have a box or not. So that sort of way of taking control of your viewing experience is something that is also making companies work potential solutions and allowing viewers to play in different ways with their subtitles or the way they're watching their audio descriptions and so on. So these are things, some of them are already implemented and we can play with them and we can customize where we're doing
them
it.
On the screen.
Exactly. Yeah, and some of them are being tested now. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that some others will come along once, virtual reality or immersive environments become more common place in our viewing experience, these things will be much more prominent and there will be new things happening that now we can only probably think about, but then in the future we will be able to experience as well.
Red Film Radio. Accessible cinema.
We have just listened to an interview with Jorge Diasintas. We discussed the current effects and the impact of COVID-19 on the future of the media accessibility landscape, from the importance of accessibility of information and culture to the need for equal access to digital content and entertainment. It's true that the virus caused changes in behavior that affected, of course, both the production and the distribution of media accessibility services, but this also created key opportunities in the field of media accessibility. And if you want to keep track of how the media accessibility field is tackling the changes of COVID-19, well, don't miss our next episode of Accessible Cinema. Meanwhile, you can visit Media Accessibility Platform's website, mapaccess.org, the first collaborative online platform gathering information on the history and the state of the art of research, policies, training, practices, and conferences in the field of media accessibility. Bye for now. This is Francesca Raffi, and this is Fred Accessible Cinema on Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio. Fred Film Radio presents Accessible Cinema, a program about media accessibility, sponsored by SubT Access, subtitling and audio description services for cinema, television, theatre performances, and other live events. Accessible Cinema. Fred Film Radio. 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.